on this edition of the Iowa Business Report.
When you talk about community, to me, this is why we do the work we do. Small businesses are essential to the well-being of our communities.
Small businesses across the country are at risk of survival due to the pandemic. What can be done to make sure they remain a vital part of our economy? A new survey says Iowa has one of the best pay rates in the country. And we'll tell you about a company that intends to bring fresh seafood to Iowans from a home base in Iowa. This is the Iowa Business Report for the first weekend of October 2020.
The Iowa Business Report is presented with support from the Iowa Association of Business and Industry. The Iowa Association of Business and Industry has been the voice of Iowa business since 1903. Learn more online at iowaabi.org. Here is Jeff Stein.
Every one of us can probably think of more than a few businesses that were forced to close during the COVID-19 pandemic. Businesses that closed and never reopened. That will be crippling for our economy and may blunt the entrepreneurial spirit for as long as a generation. Andy Gray is president of Strategy Leaders, a consulting firm that works with small businesses.
Generally, they are half the economy. So half the jobs and half of the revenue we produce in this country. They're the major source of exports. They're also the major source of innovation in terms of product development. They're also the first job and the last job for most people in our economy. So someone who is trying to get a start and learn how to work in business gets their training there. Someone who is looking for meaningful work at their end of their career most often ends up there.
We hear the phrase small business a lot. What do you mean when you say small business?
So there are two classic definitions. One is under 500 employees. The other one is under 250 employees. There's not a lot of difference in the numbers in that group because between 250 and 500, there just aren't that many businesses. When you talk about small business, you're talking about 95 to 98% of all companies in this country. They are privately held, owner-operated for the most part, and they have two or more employees. So that is an important criteria because if you don't count the number of employees, there are lots of shell companies out there. So I tend to focus on the 6 million companies that are doing business with employees in place.
So they obviously don't have the sort of resources, they don't have the sort of diversified multiple locations to where they have the ability potentially to ride out an economic downturn, especially one like we've had with the pandemic. So what are some things that these businesses that you focus on can do in order to remain viable going into 2021?
One of the things that's most common about them is most small businesses have less than 1 month of reserves in place going into a kind of downturn. If you don't have capital and you're relying on credit lines and the banks start pulling in their credit lines or you max out your credit line and can't get any more and you don't have cash of your own to fall back on, you don't have the resources to rebuild. So what do you do? Well, we're in it now. Number one focus is pivot. You have to know what customers of yours are going to make it and what customers are not. And you've got to focus on the customers who are going to make it. You also have to focus on the products or services that are still relevant or products and services you hadn't even thought of that might be relevant. But we've got clients that are doing stuff today that they hadn't even thought about doing a few months ago, making masks, parts for ventilators, you name it, parts for tents, isolation opportunity. There's all kinds of stuff that people need today. And you got to figure out what it is and figure out how you're going to make it or deliver it. I've just talked about products, but the same is true on the service side. I need advice on what to do. I need help with figuring out how to get my footprint larger in the marketplace. I need to better understand how to manage my finances. Those are all needs that people have today in a different way from 6 months ago.
There are such unique challenges for a small business owner, and you identified some of them, but it seems that we had the economic downturn a decade ago that crippled entrepreneurship. It crippled people feeling comfortable going forward. We sort of got through that, and then came the pandemic. For some of these folks, it just seems like one darn thing after another.
It is one darn thing after another. We did an analysis for a client starting at the beginning of the pandemic, and I was actually astounded. They wanted to know how many crises we had been through in our 25 years. And it came out to 8. That's one every 3 years. Hurricanes, economic, business collapse. We lost the construction market for years. They come from all different places, and they're all individually black swans, things we would have never expected to see. But taken together, they just keep coming.
Again, statistically, the numbers are not great for survival, but people are still driven to do it, regardless of any of the other economic situations. What does it take for someone to put together a company and be successful? What kind of drive, initiative, what does it take internally for someone to be successful?
There are actually some very specific attributes that are required. I'm in it, I'm on it, I'll make it happen. That level of responsibility, that willingness to multitask in the beginning, the ability to be optimistic and see forward and latch on to something and not give up. We see the single biggest driver of the success of any business in the startup and in the ongoing phase is the ambition and drive of the owner. The owner is the tent pole, and if the owner pushes hard, the tent will expand. If the owner gets scared, gets worried, gets sick, wants to step back, the tent collapses.
And that person, or potentially partnership, if they have the ability to define what the culture is of that organization, that really has an exponential impact not only on their employees, but then throughout the community as well. And it really is a driver of how successful they're going to be.
When you talk about community, to me, this is why we do the work we do. Small businesses are essential to the well-being of our communities. They have employees and owners who contribute to Boy Scouts and Girl Scouts and the church or the temple and play a role in the leadership of their local communities. And without them, if we just relied on corporate America, we wouldn't have that fabric. We have to figure out how to make sure these companies survive. And what scares me the most is right now, I don't think either our federal legislative or presidential bodies or the news media on the national basis are talking enough about the next round of bailout. So here's a really scary statistic. It came out of an NFIB survey recently that of the companies that got PPP loans, the paycheck protection loans, there are 5 million and change that got loans. 20% of those, a million companies, said they will be out of business in the next 6 months if they do not get help. Now, the average company employs 5 people. And every time we lose a job, we don't lose one job. We lose 3 jobs to 8 jobs. So think backwards to vendors that now don't have work. Think forwards to the consumers who don't spend money. So if we lose one company, 5 jobs, and that multiplies with an additional 3 jobs, we're talking about an additional 15 million on unemployment. We're already at 13 million. That takes us to 22 million. The Great Depression only got to 25 million. And we started working on surviving the Great Depression with the New Deal in 1933, 1934. We didn't get out of that until World War II in the 1940s. So here's the deal. Either we move rapidly now at the federal level as well as the state level, but the federal level is important because they're the only guys who can print money. We've got to move rapidly to provide support. I don't think we need to give away money. I think it needs to be loans, but it needs to be loans without qualifications and long paybacks. 3-year, 5-year payback, forget it. We're talking 10 to 20 year payback. When we look at TARP, which was the program that was implemented by Congress to bail out the banks, Congress gave the banks a boatload of money. And it took them 10 years to get it back, but they did. They got all their money back. And they forced the banks to change their behaviors. What they made the banks do was they made them create a better balance sheet, more depth. I think we could use this time as an opportunity to do the same. We could change our tax policy for small business, and we could incent them with tax forgiveness to build up their reserves. Get from that 1 month of reserves to 6 months of reserves, they'll be able to survive pandemics themselves. We could do that. There's no reason we couldn't do that.
Andy Gray of Strategy Leaders, a consulting firm that specializes in working with small businesses. More at strategyleaders.com. We connected via Zoom on September 24th. Still to come, where you'll find the best pay in the country. And you'll hear about a new small business with a unique approach to fill a void in a food production market. You're listening to the Iowa Business Report.
The Iowa Business Report is a copyrighted production of Totally Iowa Media, which is solely responsible for its content. For more, click on the radio programs button at totallyiowa.com.
A group known as business.org analyzed the average salary and cost of living in each state to find the best and worst paying states. Iowa is number 3 in America for the best pay. Workers in Iowa make an average salary of $38,280. And have to work 32.8 hours each month, less than one standard work week, in order to afford the average rent payment. Now, those who live in more expensive states, according to the survey, have to dedicate about twice that just to pay rent on a one-bedroom apartment. The top-ranked state for best pay is North Dakota, followed by Wyoming. Then comes Iowa and South Dakota. In fact, 9 of the top 10 best states are in the Midwest or the West. The worst state might surprise you. It's Hawaii. But then the usual suspects check in. California is second worst, then New Jersey and New York. 6 of the top 10 worst states to get paid, in fact, are on the East Coast. Now, I'm not really sure what value these sorts of surveys have, but obviously, it's better to be in the top 10 of whatever it is as opposed to the bottom 10. That average salary for Iowa does seem a bit low, but if they are uniformly using the metrics, this survey might again show that we do have things pretty good here at home. Coming up, it's not agriculture, it's aquaculture. You're listening to the Iowa Business Report.
The Iowa Business Report is presented with support from the Iowa Association of Business and Industry, helping develop the next generation of business leaders through Leadership Iowa, Business Horizons, and Leadership Iowa University. To learn more, go to iowaabi.org.
In this week's Business Profile, we'll meet Jackson Kimley, founder and president of Midland Company, which recently announced the launch of a modern, land-based shrimp production facility in Story City. Most basic and fundamental question, tell me about your company.
Yeah, so I founded Midland Co. 2 years ago on the concept of using algae to be able to produce seafood close to where the customers are here in Iowa, and to bring fresh shrimp here to the state. Since then, we focused on doing pilot trials and really to prove out our technology and the feasibility to bring sustainable seafood production here. Now we're getting into our commercial phase and launching a facility in Story City.
What are the challenges other than the fact that the creatures are not native to Central Iowa? What are the challenges that you face in trying to meet this goal?
we're trying to provide a environment that is optimal to the production of Pacific white shrimp. So trying to provide all the best water quality parameters that lead to them having good growth and being happy shrimp. That being said, what we do that's a little bit novel is we use algae, and it really provides superior water quality in the system and enables us to discharge no wastewater out of these systems into the streams around it. So,
what's the difference between what you might raise here, I'll say in the middle of America, as opposed to what might be raised, shall we say, in a more natural environment?
Most shrimp that we get in the United States is sourced from pond aquaculture, so farm-raised fish in Southeast Asia, so Thailand, China, those type areas. But that product is not fresh. It sits on a boat and is frozen for a long period of time, so quality is sporadic. A lot of shrimp that comes to the United States is very poor quality. For us, we're able to harvest that shrimp, get it on your plate right away, and serve fresh shrimp. There's almost no fresh shrimp available in the United States. Less than 0.1% is fresh. So being able to provide fresh seafood really is the game changer.
What kind of demand is there for this?
Yeah, so the United States consumes 1.5 billion pounds of shrimp every year. Americans really are interested in fresh seafood. They're obviously buying a lot of frozen, as I mentioned, 0.1%. But really, there's a huge demand for shrimp, and folks are looking, how do we get higher quality shrimp that's not a frozen import from Asia, something that can be fresh and local?
If this works out the way you have planned, and obviously you've done the test, you've done the research, so there's great optimism, how far away from Story City can you distribute this and still call it fresh?
Shrimp have a shelf life of 3 days fresh, so really the key is to get shrimp to consumers fast. Our long-term goal is to build a contract grower network in the state that has partner farmers that invest in facilities and then do the grow out of the shrimp, and we help support those facilities. And then we'll focus on the Midwestern metropolitan hubs for where the shrimp goes. So Des Moines, Omaha, Kansas City, really be distributing fresh shrimp through those distributors.
How unique is your process?
Our process and how we produce it, that's really kind of our key sauce and what we've focused our research on. Mm-hmm. There's been a lot of interest in trying to do land-based aquaculture for the high-level reason that we can start producing seafood close to where consumers are. But these traditional systems, and what I've seen, is that they use bacteria to treat the waste. What we do that's novel is we use algae. So algae is able to uptake the nutrients and the waste that's excreted from the shrimp, and then we can recycle that back and have that be a regenerative fertilizer that can go on Iowa's farm fields.
So obviously you're able to assist those around in different forms of growth of food. How did you get interested in this? This is obviously a unique niche. How is it that you got interested in it?
So I had an internship at Iowa State at a small shrimp farm. Learned how fantastic the product was just from tasting it. In a rural community, they were always sold out. And I just said, you know, this aquaculture thing is, and producing fish close to where the customers are, is the future. But we just need to figure out how do we produce it. So I've been working in this game for almost 6 years in the previous company and this one, and have been working to try to find a good production system that can get cost-effective fresh seafood to customers.
So we're talking about what is known as Pacific white shrimp. First of all, describe the taste and tell us how what you're going to produce is different from frozen products that might have that name.
Yeah, so Pacific white shrimp is known for a firm but tender. Lots of folks have had seafood that comes in, it's been frozen and then thawed out and then frozen and thawed out. It could be soggy. So firm but tender at the same time. And then it's going to, what's going to take most folks back is that they have not had shrimp that has a sweet flavor. Our shrimp has a light sweet flavor that tastes absolutely fantastic, and it really kind of changes the game in shrimp. Kind of almost lobster-esque, a sweet, very rich type flavor.
It is fascinating to me because this is such a unique use of America's heartland, right? We talk about how we feed the world, we here in Iowa. This is just another way to develop all of this. and remain, because as you said, much of this is coming frozen from Asia. This is a way for us to rely upon domestically produced products, and that tends to take out a lot of the difficulty that we often have with trading partners. Am I right?
Yeah, 90% of our seafood that we consume in the United States is imported. So really, it just makes sense, considering the United States is so good at producing protein products. And we have all the inputs available to become a powerhouse in seafood already. So we really could flip the script. And what a lot of this takes, and what I was really good at that we need for land-based, is construction skills, animal husbandry, feed inputs, energy inputs, and all of those. Iowa is one of the cheapest spots in the world to be able to do a lot of those, and highly skilled in those areas as well.
This is really fascinating stuff. What's the biggest challenge, do you think, at this point? As you mentioned, you have been working in aquaculture with a different company that you founded, and now this company. What's the biggest challenge to this game plan, this business plan?
Aquaculture is relatively, compared to most protein products, capital intense. So it takes a lot of upfront capital to be able to build out these facilities. But then once you get them running, they are able to be highly profitable and to be able to pay off that investment. So for us, being an early stage business in a relatively new industry, we have to raise significant capital and put those inputs to good use as we grow.
Jackson Kimley, founder and president of Midland Company of Story City. We spoke via Zoom on September 28th. More online at MidlandSeafood.com. And that brings us to the close of this week's program. We're back again next week at this same time. In the meantime, you can listen to all or part of today's program by going to TotallyIowa.com and clicking on the Radio Programs link. You'll also find podcasts of full interviews with many of the folks you hear on this program. They're listed as IBR Extras and IBR Business Profiles. And we're also found on all the major podcast distributors, including iHeart, Apple, and Google. We welcome your comments. Send them by email to radio@totallyiowa.com. I'm Jeff Stein. Thank you for joining us, and we hope you have a prosperous week.
The Iowa Business Report is presented with support from the Iowa Association of Business and Industry. Follow ABI on Twitter @IowaABI and online at iowaabi.org.